I'm Tracy Sable. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, new evidence as former President Trump hits the campaign trail. Prosecutors release more allegations about his conduct in the 2020 election. Eye on the economy. Democrats and Republicans disagree sharply on the issue most important to voters. We're on Capitol Hill. Security at synagogues. At the start of the Jewish New Year, there is an increased police presence at places of worship. Rabbi David Wolpe reacts. Plus, staring into space. An exciting announcement from the Vatican Observatory, and it could mean a rare opportunity for the faithful. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thanks for being with us. Our top story tonight, President Joe Biden responds directly to EWTN News Nightly's question about the race for the Oval Office. He also weighed in on former President Donald Trump's legal battle. Biden made the comments while heading to Florida and Georgia to get a firsthand look at the immense damage inflicted by Hurricane Helene. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen.
That's right, Tracy. Good evening to you. As Kamala Harris and Donald Trump battle it out to replace the outgoing Joe Biden, this morning I was able to briefly ask the president about the heated contest.
As President Joe Biden was leaving the White House, headed to Marine One on the South Lawn, I was able to ask him about the very close contest for his job.
Are you surprised the race between Harris and Trump is so close right now?
Meanwhile, the landmark 2020 election case against former President Donald Trump, a newly unsealed court filing, lays out fresh details submitted by special counsel Jack Smith's team, arguing that the former president is not entitled to immunity from prosecution. The brief was made public over the Trump legal team's objections, with just over a month to go in the presidential race. On Truth Social, Trump posting, for 60 days prior to an election, the Department of Injustice is supposed to do absolutely nothing that would taint or interfere with said election. They disobeyed their own rule in favor of complete and total election interference. I did nothing wrong. They did. And on the campaign trail today, Trump told supporters at a rally in Saginaw, Michigan,
"It's great to be back in this beautiful state with thousands of proud, hardworking American patriots, which is exactly what you are. Early mail-in voting is underway now in Michigan, so if you want, go out and get that ballot, return it as soon as possible."
Michigan Secretary of State, interviewed about the new filing in the Trump case, says the number one question she gets wherever she goes:
"What are you going to do to keep voters and election officials safe if what happened in 2020 happens again?" And certainly we're hoping for the best. We're hoping and planning for a smooth election where everyone respects each other and respects the results, whatever they may be. But we're prepared for every contingency.
And while leaving the White House today, another reporter asked President Biden,
"Do you believe that Donald Trump was acting as a private candidate and not as president when he sought to overturn the 2020 election, as Jack Smith laid out in his filing?"
I'll let Jack Smith make that case.
Also on the campaign trail, Kamala Harris is in Wisconsin today. On Friday, she plans a rally in Flint, Michigan. Tomorrow, Donald Trump will be at a town hall in North Carolina. And separately tonight, when the president was walking towards Marine One, I was also able to ask him if he had any updates on the hostages being held by Hamas in Gaza. The president said, quote, "Not right now." At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
All right, thank you, Owen. And for more, let's bring in Derek Mueller. He's an election law expert and professor of law at the University of Notre Dame. Professor Mueller, great to be with you as always. A lot to discuss, but first, tell us more about these new claims by Jack Smith and what stood out to you the most.
Right, so Smith's brief here is coming back after the Supreme Court's decision this summer in Trump versus United States, which said that a former president can't be prosecuted for his official acts at the core of his constitutional authority, But for other official acts that are at the periphery, he could be prosecuted, but that presumption of immunity has to be overcome by the prosecutor. And for private acts, of course, he can be prosecuted. So in a 165-page filing, Jack Smith is going through fact by fact, detail by detail, to say these were the acts of a private citizen campaigning for office, pressuring officials. They were not within the president's scope of authority. And therefore, even after the Supreme Court's decision, there's no immunity. This prosecution can proceed.
Yeah, and former President Trump's legal team, well, they're questioning the timing of these allegations, saying that they're being released too soon to the election. Your thoughts on that, and do you think they have a point?
I mean, there is a point that anytime you are engaged in a battle like this with a candidate, it obviously has the risk of affecting the election. Now, the Department of Justice policy, there is kind of a 60-day window, and it's bit internal and not necessarily sort of a public hard and fast rule. It's usually about bringing indictments, but this indictment was brought months ago, years ago. It's really a question about whether or not these new filings that do have new facts, new factual allegations that the prosecution might have held at bay until trial, but trying to demonstrate his private conduct. So on the one hand, we want this case to move forward, but on the other hand, there's no question. It's happening in the middle of an election season, and the judge has authorized the filing, in this sort of narrow window before the election.
Yeah, Derek, so what comes next? I mean, what will happen to President Trump on the campaign trail?
So, I mean, on the campaign trail, obviously, I think he's going to deny these allegations, or maybe he'll just ignore them and move on. His legal team is going to have a chance to respond to these allegations. They ask for a late November date. From what I've seen, the judge has authorized a November 7th reply. So that's going to be days after the election. His legal team can respond to these allegations. So we'll see that the legal process will play out. But I don't know that we're going to see a whole lot before the election. Instead, this will be left to the political process and the campaigns to fight about what it means.
Switching gears, something else I just want to touch on quickly before I let you go. You, of course, are at the University of Notre Dame, as we mentioned. One student newspapers there recently made news when it said for the first time in 12 years, more students were actually planning to vote for the Republican candidate for president. And Donald Trump had about 48%, and Kamala Harris was at 46%. Can you talk to us more about that? Take us inside of those numbers. And does that reflect what you're seeing and hearing on campus?
Sure. So I'm at the law school, so I'm a little bit insulated maybe from all of the rest of the university. It's a large campus with many great students and great colleagues. I will say, I think that Irish Rover survey, the survey suggesting that more students are favoring Donald Trump over Kamala Harris, you know, there's a lot to dig into there. They balance out the students from across the campus. They point out that both candidates are deeply unpopular with students. Both of them are underwater, if you will. But at the end of the day, you know, whether it's the economy, immigration, abortion, I don't know what it is, but there seems to be a sense in the student body that it's favoring the Republican candidate more than it has at any time in the recent past. So it's certainly an interesting thing to watch out for.
Yeah, for sure. Derek, thank you so much for coming on. I always appreciate your insights.
Of course.
All right. With a little more than a month until the election, the economy remains a top issue. Experts say people continue to worry about the price of food, consumer goods, and housing. Democrats argue the economy is the best in history, while Republicans say otherwise and point to what they say is the Biden administration's excessive spending. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us now with that story. Eric.
Good evening, Tracy. Yes, you are not going to find many people out there who don't have a strong opinion about the economy. The same is true among Republicans and Democrats up here on Capitol Hill. One thing that they can agree on is inflation is much too high, but point fingers at each other for its cause.
Prices have risen faster than wages. There's a gap that's still there. Some have said in Louisiana it might be 20%. But I can tell you that people are feeling it. They're singing a happy tune a few weeks before the election, hoping that nobody notices.
So who's to blame? Democrats claim that they're fixing the economy from the Trump administration.
We have strengthened the economy in the face of constant Republican attacks and obstruction that would hurt workers and make life harder for everyday Americans.
According to government data, supply chain disruptions are causing food and energy prices to increase. And the war in Ukraine contributed substantially to the sharp rise in inflation during and following the COVID pandemic. Now, day three in the port worker strike, economists say Americans will start to see prices climb in the next few days on all goods. Democrats are also blaming big corporations.
These giant companies, the ones where there's a lot of concentration in the industry, like in the grocery industry, said, this is an opportunity while everyone's talking about price increases just to lard on more price increases. In other words, price gouging.
Jobs are up. GDP growth is up. Wages are up. You know what else is up? Corporate profits. And what we see are a number of corporations now price gouging consumers.
Republicans say that argument is nonsense.
This is not something where you can just blame big oil and go after price gouging. This is not something where you can attack others when it is failed policies that this administration has put in place.
Come on. I mean, we're in a recession. And they've changed the definition of recession since they've been in. This is the worst economy we've had in years and years. Prices are continuing to go up.
Republicans add that President Biden must step in and help Americans deal with the supply chain issues. Right now, Congress is largely on the sidelines. They won't be back to Washington, D.C. until mid-November. So how's this all going to play out come election night? We'll have to wait and see. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
All right, now to the Middle East, where the Israeli military issues evacuation warnings in Lebanon, possibly signaling a wider ground offensive. This comes as Israel has started what it calls a limited ground incursion. Meanwhile, an Israeli airstrike on an apartment late Wednesday killed several Hezbollah-affiliated first responders. Israel says that it has struck around 200 Hezbollah targets across Lebanon. And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including the deadliest hurricane in the U.S. in the last 19 years. How the Diocese of Knoxville is helping the people of Tennessee recover from Hurricane Helene. The death toll from Hurricane Helene is now reaching 200 people. This includes some workers in Tennessee, where flooding swept away nearly a dozen people at a plastics factory. Only five workers were rescued. Among the others are two confirmed dead, and four others remain missing. An investigation is now underway since survivors claim that they were told to stay on the job despite rising floodwaters. The company Impact Plastics denies the allegations. This comes as the Air National Guard is helping with recovery efforts in East Tennessee, largely with heavy machinery and trained personnel, and comes amid reports of aid being slower to arrive elsewhere. And joining us now for more on the situation in Eastern Tennessee is Bishop Mark Beckman of the Diocese of Knoxville. Your Excellency, thank you so much for your time today. It has been 1 week since Helene made landfall. Tell us about the situation right now in your diocese. What is it like?
So I would say the most affected areas are the northeastern portion of our diocese, closest to the mountains, where most of the rain fell. So we had the opportunity yesterday to visit a few of the most affected communities. Erwin, Tennessee was one of the more strongly affected areas. And to witness firsthand some of the damage that took place up there, but also to meet some of the people who've been affected, and also many of the people who are helping as volunteers right now to reach out to those folks.
Yeah, and how are people coping right now, and how are you helping them process this tragedy, both, you know, emotionally and spiritually?
Well, I think, first of all, the response on the part of the folks here in this diocese has been absolutely incredible. And I have to say that I know there's an emotional and spiritual component, and I'll talk about that in a moment. But our Catholic Charities here on the ground here has really reached out and helped with the physical needs of those communities in an incredible way. I've seen the volunteers at work and all of the supplies that gathered and staged up in that area. But you're right, the spiritual and emotional needs are significant. And I will tell you, the first group of people that I met was a circle of people who were caught up in the flooding that took place in the factory in Erwin, Tennessee. And there's a lot of grief there, a lot of sadness. Those who survived, I think, probably are feeling some of that survivor's guilt. And there are still people missing. So we went to a press conference yesterday, and they're still looking for seven missing persons in that area. And the family members who are left are very distraught. So I think the most important spiritual and emotional support we could give was simply being present with them And we did pray with them. We listened to them, had the opportunity just to spend some time helping them to express some of the things that they are feeling right now.
Yeah. How can we help, Your Excellency? Are there things that we can do to help people in your diocese in Tennessee right now?
Well, I'll tell you, the most important thing is the awareness of what's taking place so that the people know that they're not forgotten. I know that this particular storm has affected large parts of the United States, and listening to the things that have taken place across our state border in North Carolina, where they've also experienced pretty bad devastation. But I think the awareness of people's generosity, I know that there are national organizations that are helping, like Catholic Charities, to support the rebuilding efforts. All of those things matter. And of course, the prayerful support, you know, that people know that they're not alone, that people are praying for them.
Yeah. And before I let you go, is there anything else that you'd like our audience to know about the situation?
I think the most important thing, sometimes we forget that each of these people have their own individual stories, and each one of them were caught unexpected in the remnants of this storm. And so it's learning to accompany persons where they are right now at this particular moment.
And we're certainly praying for everyone. Bishop Mark Beckman of the Diocese of Knoxville, Tennessee, Your Excellency, thank you for your time today. God bless you. We appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Thanks for the good work you're doing and covering the story.
Well, Virginia School Board is set to pay a teacher more than $500,000 in damages and attorney's fees. This after he was fired from his job with West Point School District in 2018 for refusing to use a student's transgender pronouns. The teacher's student was a biological female who believed she was a boy. The teacher used the student's new preferred name while avoiding pronouns because he said it violated his religious rights as an Anglican Christian. Up next on EWTN News Night, Jewish New Year, how the Jewish community is celebrating a major feast in the midst of the conflict in the Middle East. Plus, one of the oldest observatories in the world has a new announcement. A Christian mother of four has been sentenced to death for allegedly blaspheming the Prophet Muhammad. The charges relate to content posted on the messaging service WhatsApp. The 40-year-old must also pay a fine of around $1,000. Aid to the Church in Need says that it plans to file an appeal against the death sentence. Our celebrations for Rosh Hashanah, also known as the Jewish New Year, run until Friday. But in some areas, the high holy day is being met with increased security. Officials in New York City say there is heightened security at synagogues and Israeli diplomatic properties following Iran's missile strike against Israel earlier this week. The New York Police Department, which already prepared extra security, put its plan into action a day early. Overseas, a pair of bombs rocked the area around the Israeli embassy in Copenhagen. No injuries were reported, but nearby Jewish schools closed for the day. Before the holiday began, we spoke with a well-known rabbi for his thoughts. And for more, we turn now to Rabbi David Wolpe, the Max Webb Emeritus Rabbi of Sinai Temple in Los Angeles and the Scholar in Residence at the Maimonides Fund. Rabbi Wolpe, great to be with you today, and Happy New Year to you. How are you balancing this time of rejoicing with the heightened security and the unease amid the attacks by Iran on Israel?
It's very strange in a certain way, because as you say, this is supposed to be a time of tremendous joy and renewal and community, and yet everybody has this undercurrent of anxiety for both ourselves and much more for our sisters and brothers in Israel. And it's particularly poignant in my congregation, since more than half of the members of Sinai Temple grew up in Iran. And they, you know, they do not bear any animus towards the Iranian people, but they hate this regime that they think has turned Iran into a theocratic slave state.
Yeah, and on social media, I know you recently posted that the new year brings with it resolutions and also an opportunity to change. There's also the chance to renew the convictions that each one of us carries, adding right, that God renews his creation each day. Tell us a little bit more about that.
So the real idea behind Rosh Hashanah is that the world was created once and is also recreated all the time. And that's true for a human being as well. You have a fate and you have a destiny. And what you do with your life is what you, together with your community and the people you love and your relationship to God, it's what you make of it. And so we understand that everybody has different attributes and is born in a different way, different family, different origins. But we also understand that all of us have the Spirit of God in us and have the opportunity to be better next year than we were this year.
Yeah, and this past year, starting last October 7th, it recently has been a rough one for sure. Yeah. I'd like to get your reflections on that and your hope for the new year.
So I spent the last year at Harvard, and I saw some pretty awful things after October 7th going on, even among the youth, some of the best educated youth in our country. And my hope is, I think, that the spirit of reconciliation and of acceptance and of freedom will prevail over the really attractive sense of being vengeful and full of grudge and anger. I don't think that often our politics helps this, but it's up to us to make it better. So you can start in your small community being a little bit kinder and a little bit better, and that's my hope for the new year.
Yeah, and Rabbi, I'm wondering, for those that you talk to, how are they feeling during this time?
I think most of them feel as though they're cautiously hopeful, especially given the fact that events in the Middle East seem to be turning somewhat. And I think Israel has shown itself enormously resourceful. And I think most people have like a deep faith that the United States is both not only a strong but a good country, and that it is possible to make the next year better. But I don't think they're looking at it with rose-colored glasses, because we face enormous problems both inside ourselves and in our world.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Rabbi Wolpe, thank you so much for joining us and for all of your insights and your time. We appreciate it. Well, a big day in Rome today. North American College seminarians from across the United States were ordained as deacons. Seminarians from the NAC were ordained this morning in St. Peter's Basilica. Archbishop Alexander Sample from the Archdiocese of Portland, Oregon, presided over the celebration in front of around 1,500 attendees. During his homily, the Archbishop thanked the families for the gifts of their sons now given to the church and reminded the young men of their new identity in image of Christ, the true servant. Well, finally, tonight, a new report says that it is about to become a little easier to do some stargazing near the Vatican. The Associated Press says the historic observatory inside the summer residence of the popes will soon be open to the public. How about that? The Spicola Vaticana is one of the oldest observatories in the world, yet it continues to contribute to international scientific debates. Among its projects is analyzing data from the Webb Space Telescope. And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. And we leave you with more sights and sounds from the ordination of deacons from the North American College in Rome. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night and God bless.
Holy angels of God,
pray, my Lord.